everybody, and welcome to Declarations 42. This is an all CSM Minutes edition. This is me, Alexei Evkar, here with my usual co-host, Ninja Turtle.
Hello, everybody.
And two special guests, which have announced their candidacy for CSM 8, Mina.
Hi there.
And Rupard Tag.
Hail and greetings.
Whew. We have a lot to talk about. First, we'll go through our usual shout-outs, and then we'll do a little sponsorship, and then we are going to get right into the minutes. Our usual podcast format is going out the window for this episode because there is a lot to discuss in these things. So first of all, I'd like to give a shout-out, two shout-outs, to Powers V2, my bro on Twitter, and to my longtime friends. We met them in Syndicate, Rise of Legion. And they have recently started to get into the podcasting, streaming, talking head business. So, best of luck, and I hope they enjoy the welcome of the e-podcast community.
Hey guys, Turtle here. I have also two shoutouts. First shoutout is to CSM7 as a whole. There's a lot in the minutes there, and I guess I was really impressed, to say the least. And my second shout-out is to you, Rippard. Things got a little heated on 40. Some things might have been said, taken out of context. I did not mean to call you specifically Hitler, but I think my point was still valid, and I'm going to leave it at that. So you'll get your 60 seconds. And hey, now that Alex isn't running for CSM8, you have a shot at my vote there, buddy.
Good to know. Thank you.
Not specifically Hitler, but perhaps in a more general sense.
The Hitler's second cousin, twice removed.
Yes, Hitler-esque.
Sounds like I missed something fun.
Minna, how about you? Any shout-out?
Not really, no. I'll echo Ninja Turtles' CSM7 thing, though. You guys did a pretty good job, for the most part. I'm sure you'll hear about that later.
No doubt. Rippard?
Hitler's pool boy here, and indeed, great job on the minutes. I'm going to enjoy talking about him. My shout-outs are to CCP Unifex, Sunset, and Ripley. The more I read about, the more I think about, you know, where they're going to go with EVE in the next, you know, 2-3 years, the more I like it. P-Bump and the rest of Clockwork Pineapple, thanks for giving us great fights, particularly every Friday night out there in Syndicate. Those of you who have been really, really supportive and nice about both my blog's pledge drive in December and my CSM run. And a big shout out to the Detanian Fleet incursion community.
Are you you're an armor runner there, huh?
I do both, but, you know, the Detanian Fleet has also been really nice last few days.
It's cool to see upstart communities like that still within the Incursion Runners as a whole, because Shield has really, I mean, come down to such a fine point, and there's still a lot of opportunities for armor fleets if you can get your shit together.
Yeah, they've done a great job of bouncing back from CCP just almost quite literally driving a sword through their heart early in 2012.
Yeah, I was going to say, come on, guys, I thought Incursions were dead.
I don't even think they were dead when people were saying they were dead. I ran an Incursion at the time. It was still good money.
EVE players overreacting? It ain't so.
I know, right? As usual, our sponsor, EVETimeCode.com. Buy 14 EVE timecodes, get one free. EVE timecode where your business counts. They support the community. You guys should be supporting them. And now let's get into this, guys. There, to give you guys the context, and to give our audience the context, there was a lot of hostility in the CSM towards CCP as recently as November. A lot of why and all the background sort of things were unable to be talked about because it was very much tied to CCP's planning process and what they were thinking of doing for 2013. But now that story is pretty much out there with these minutes.
Now, as part of that, if I can throw in a question, as part of that hostility, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it, the CSM as stakeholder and them kind of changing gears on you, you know, mid-shift.
That was definitely the start of it, but the real hostility came when we started hearing, but never actually getting confirmation till we were in the room at the summit, that passes were, you know, essentially not given in 2013.
Yeah, I have a feeling that the, quote, tension in the room line there in the minutes understated.
Oh yeah, the emotion definitely crackles through. Now, the strategy document was published on November 23rd, and the summit was obviously a month later, or about 3 weeks later. So, can you talk a little bit about the timing on that?
So we had the doc, and we had held on to it for a week for CCP's consideration. So that was written in like the first and second weekend of November is when all this was really starting to go down. Once they had it, you know, they read it, and then it was, you know, we had a meeting about what to think of it, and basically asked them, can we put this out? And when they said yes, we were like, oh, well. Frankly, I didn't expect them to let us.
Yeah, it's really interesting to reread the strategy document in retrospective, you know, now that the minutes are out. It's kind of interesting to see how that kind of informed their thought process into the summit, or I thought anyway.
Well, it maybe informed their new development process. I mean, it feels like they took a lot of your guys' ideas and iterated on them.
Well, they did, but kind of sideways. Like, they obviously had their own ideas, and they kind of adjusted their ideas based on what's in the first two pages of the document. But it's interesting to see kind of how they did it. It definitely wasn't straightforward.
Like, I don't want to say, like, you know, CCP in effect, like, took our document and was like, oh, this is what we need to be doing. Like, he obviously had a longer-term view, like, this is what they wanted to do. What I think that we did was give him support for what he was trying to do against sort of the entrenched views of CCP of how they were developing, and just gave him a little more ammunition, a little more affirmation of taking the company in this new direction. And like you said, obviously there was some vocabulary shifts, like changing the conversation toward a certain view, even if they already had these ideas. Clearly they were adapting them a little bit, because our document was now in the water as part of the conversation. That's what my ultimate goal was for that thing.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and they pretty obviously, and you know, they're reaping the whirlwind of this, they pretty obviously kind of ignored pages 3 through 6 and really focused on those first two pages.
So another thing that was going on was the stakeholder process and us trying to jumpstart it back. That was related to this strategy document being submitted in. But us as a stakeholder was meant to be just attached to one of the teams. The stakeholder document became an opportunity to show us that we could be more valuable earlier in a general sense, like we had been advocating for a long time. And obviously it worked in that way as well, because even currently, we're helping CCP theme for the next expansion, the summer 2013 expansion. And it's not like a vaporware promise like the stakeholder thing was from the last summit. We actually have files now. We've been having meetings. We have another meeting, not this Monday, but the Monday after that. We're submitting our own themes for consideration.
Yeah,
it is a real thing.
They're definitely talking the talk. Or actually walking the walk, excuse me, rather than just talking the talk, which is great.
Yeah, Trevor put forward his post about that, which was interesting to read.
Yeah, Trevor's new post out there is really interesting.
Yeah, and I'm glad that he put it out there, because it frees us up to talk in a little more detail about what we're doing.
Which is always good.
Indeed. And for a lot of people that are concerned about this sort of thing, no, the NDA did not really factor into what went into the minutes. For the most part, in fact, almost entirely, this thing was not scrubbed for NDA. There were a few quotes that were requested to be dequoted and just put in as, like, descriptions or transcriptions. But other than that, no, there wasn't anything that we had to take out or anything like that. Now, there was some editorial choices made, particularly in the 00 session, which talks about POS, which we'll be getting to in a second. But those were done by Elise Randolph, and at no one's request. He just It was his session to write, and that's the way he decided to write it. Both of you guys are running for CSM 8. How do you... I guess we'll start with Mina first, but... How do you see this? How do you think about, you know, this process, the failure, and then the sort of restart that we're undergoing now, considering you might have to pick up this football in a couple months?
Well, I'm actually curious about the process. I guess we may be, as you said, picking up the football and continuing the work, but do they say, here's some different things you can be the stakeholder on, or is it a matter of the CSM puts together their own idea and says, we want to do this?
It was the case that we wanted to do this, and they thought it might be a good idea, but the decision was made that we really shouldn't be attached to one of these teams as an because the whole attached to a team idea was an experiment. CCP was really concerned with whether or not the CSM could be involved in the process without becoming a burden. In other words, could involving us not delay their deadlines? That was their main concern. But we beat them to that. We were within 48 hours. We met every deadline that they gave us. But it was still unknown at the time as to whether we could do that. Now, of course, we knew that we could do that. CCP didn't know. So they went to the different teams, and they found a team that would be willing to work with us. And that's how we got attached to Team Super Friends, which is doing bounty hunting in Wardex.
Shades of CSM-5 there.
Hmm? In what way?
Oh, in that there were, for CSM-5, there were teams that were willing to work with the CSM and teams that were not.
Well, I didn't follow things this closely back then, but I understand the climate was a little chilly at the time.
Well, so. Each team was kind of an entity of its, you know, in and of itself, and some wanted to work with the CSM, and some didn't want to have anything to do with the CSM.
Indeed.
There was no overall kind of overarching boss to say, you know, thou shalt, you know, go forth and work with these player representatives the way, you know, CCP Unifex and, well, really, Unifex has picked up that flag today.
Yeah, and it did sound like you took a lot of credit for the failure of the program in general. Less than spectacular success, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely. He absolutely said the buck stops here, and, you know, he took it all on CCP.
Initially, when we were doing our stakeholder meetings, now we did get a sprint review, as the minutes say. We did get one of those. Fortunately, it was like the third one out of six, and we didn't get any of the follow-up ones either. But when we did have meetings about the stakeholder thing, we were actually mostly talking with either Unifex or Soundwave, and occasionally Ripley. But we never actually met with the team, which... It was part of the problem, I think.
Absolutely.
However, it wasn't a permanent problem. Like, as things were deteriorating in November, this was also a period where Celine was unavailable for personal reasons. And Trevor, our intrepid vice chair, I believe is what he is. Yes. Our vice chair, Trevor, is my arch nemesis. He is my villain, and I am the hero of the CSM, according to James 3:15. He's very much a get more information, wait and see, kind of very careful, very measured person. And that's his leadership style as well.
Yeah, Trevor's history on the CSM has been all about patience.
I'm not as patient. So I was getting super frustrated, particularly with the war stuff, because as far as we knew, this was another point of frustrations, particularly for me and Hans. As far as we knew, war was going to be completely cut from Retribution. They weren't going to do anything for it. Because, as it was presented to us, the few war changes that they were going to do were minor, and they still were relatively minor. And they were afterthoughts. That would be, if the team had enough time, after they were done making bounties, they would get to wars. And as things gone on, we heard less and less and less and less about what features were going to come for War Deck iterations. To the point where I got fed up with it, and I mailed that team leader directly. that seems to be Sonic Clover, and said, hey, if I don't hear from you, I'm going to the forums with this, and I'm going to, you know, basically stop talking about it in private and start letting people know that there might be a problem, that they need to get involved. And sure enough, we had a meeting, and it was a really good meeting. They committed to doing the fixes that they put in for Retribution. And I also used it as an opportunity to sort of restart our involvement in the bounty hunting issue and let him know that obviously the stakeholder thing wasn't going as well, but that there was still time and there was still interest from the CSM in pursuing it, and, you know, if we could work more directly with the CSM and Team Super Friend instead of going through other leadership channels. And it wasn't perfect, but they definitely increased their communication on the forums with the CSM, and there were some positive changes to the bounty hunting feature that came in. I think the bounty hunting feature in general was, I mean, that team really delivered, even, I think, beyond the best of expectations that we had. They really delivered.
Yeah, bounty hunting is fantastic. If I can tease my my co-guest a little bit, shooting goons, particularly members of Goonwolf, has become my favorite activity because they give more isk than rats.
I bet. Although you may want to look at the Honey Badger Coalition now. Someone put a fairly sizable bounty on them, so more targets for you, right?
Yeah, the key concern I have, and CCP Punctures got lesser, basically put out a tweet not too long ago saying, you know, what metrics should we look at on this bounty hunting thing? And I immediately pinged back and said, you need to look at bounties set per week and bounties paid per week. I mean, this is a fantastic feature that CCP has launched nearly perfectly, but, you know, history shows that CCP has done this many times before, and a lot of these fantastic features, they never touch again, and they rot on the vine. Because they don't iterate on them, they don't improve them, they don't, you know, continue to work them and push them. And so, you know, what we really need to know is this bounty hunting thing going to have legs or not?
I'm glad to see that Unifex sort of took the credit for the mistakes and whatnot, and seems committed to making it work well in the future, because I think being involved from the start, you know, picking our feature either from a list of features or, hey, this is something we'd like to do, and being in on it from the beginning, from the very first sprints, would be awesome.
Necessary, I'd say, even.
I also agree with that. Necessary, yeah. I mean, I'm an engineer. If you come to me on a project and want me to make changes, or solicit my advice halfway through the project and want me to make changes, I'm going to ask, what the hell are you doing? You're going to spend way too much time and money implementing these changes because you're halfway done already. So you're right. Necessary is definitely the right word.
Rippert, your response, sir?
Oh, I completely agree with that. I do kind of want to take it from the standpoint of, I think this is a great, you know, launch of this concept. And as I blogged the other day, I don't think the first pass has been successful. I do again credit CCP Unifex with taking all of the blame for that. But it kind of puts CSM7 in kind of an interesting position, you know, in a couple of ways. The last time I was on Declarations, I kind of joked that CSM7 was going to be kind of the Dwight Eisenhower of CSMs, and, you know, it was kind of a historical reference in that, you know, Dwight Eisenhower wasn't particularly respected during his own presidency, definitely wasn't respected immediately afterward, but came to be respected later when they saw all, you know, when people saw all the groundwork he laid for what later presidents were able to accomplish. And I think that's going to be CSM7's legacy. The interesting thing about that is, you know, as we sit here talking right now, 7 out of 13 members of CSM7 are not running for CSM8, and every CSM has 5 to 6 workhorses that do probably 90% of the work, if not 95% of the work, with the remaining, you know, 7 or 8 people just being kind of hangabouts. And of those 6 people on CSM7, 5 of them have declared that they're not running, including yourself, Alex. So that creates a very interesting transition problem in that CCP almost gets to completely reset expectations and reset this narrative to whatever they like, because there's going to be very, very few people on CSM8 that are going to be able to say, no, that's not what you agreed to, and, you know, really hold CCP accountable. So it's really going to be kind of interesting because we've got this, you know, and this three producer team agreeing to this CSM stakeholder thing, but now they get a chance to kind of redefine what that means. So that's going to be kind of interesting.
Well, I disagree. I think it was successful because you got a real idea of what doesn't work when you're talking about the stakeholder process. Like, it really struck a chord with me when Celine said something to the effect of, yeah, bounty hunting was successful, you know, one of the features you guys were quote-unquote attached to, but it created a lot of resentment within the CSM. And you really got an idea of what situations aren't going to work when you're going forward with this stakeholder issue. And it's interesting that you bring up the leadership void that's going to be in CSM8. I don't think there's any question to that. It'll be interesting to see who steps up, but you know, this very well may not be something that works out with CSM8 either. You know, CSM8 in the future may be, you know, the next CSM that's breeding this idea, and it may take a while. This may take years.
Oh, it's already, CSM and stakeholder started with CSM4, so it's, you know, it's been, you know, iterated on at least 3 or 4 times now.
I would even challenge that as something. I don't even think it was attempted till now.
Well, fair enough. Ninja Turtle brought up a great, you know, point, and one of the most heartbreaking lines in the CSM as stakeholder section is somebody in the CSM saying, you know, yes, it turns out the feature turned out really well, and then, but, and, you know, just my heart was breaking when I read that, because it just showed that, you know, a lot of the CSM really were clearly frustrated that they weren't involved sooner, involved, you know, more often, and involved in a really kind of deep level.
Well, it's a little backhanded, too, because if that feature had completely flopped, and then you guys were labeled as stakeholders on the project, like, who do you think would be catching flack for that right next to CCP?
Oh, yeah. We'd have been drawn and quartered.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you guys lucked out that these features, you know, did as well as they did, to be honest, but...
Well, I kind of disagree with that, because if the thing had flopped on the floor, then, in a very ironic way, the CSM would have more weapons to point at CCP and say, you know, look at this disaster, look at this all over the floor, why didn't you get us involved in this sooner?
Well, thankfully, we have other places to point to that.
Yeah, there's 114, or maybe 115 page thread now, that's a testimony to that.
It's 116 last time I looked.
Really? Oh, it's grown. I think the point, though, is, I mean, CCP knows that they messed up, and yes, with all the bets leaving, maybe they can redefine it, but at the same time, we all know, courtesy of the minutes and this sort of conversation and whatnot, what went down and all that good stuff, so we can do our best to hold CCP to this.
Yep, that's absolutely,
you know, it's
true.
It's public,
right,
knowledge, so they can't just sort of hand-wave it away.
That's an important function of the minutes. You know, keeping people accountable, making sure everybody's on the same page.
Yeah,
and
one of them.
Again, I'll emphasize to the audience and to you guys, like, that's what was said. Nothing got cut out for the NDA. So as far as the status quo, like, that's it. Now, there's going to be a transition period between 7 and 8 where the CSM are going to be able to talk to one another directly with everybody covered under the NDA. But as far as the public and everything, the story's out there now, and the CSM's able to talk about it, all the background and everything that went into it a lot more freely. That's why we felt that getting these minutes out was so important, and we have, in fact, I think, broken the record for minutes. If not, we came damn close.
In terms of what?
Release time?
Oh, no, not even close.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, CSM5 was almost superhuman at turning around minutes quickly. As a matter of fact, I pinged Hans because he wrote about that on his blog and pointed that out and asked, you know, even if, because I think you guys are working in a different environment. What I asked was, even if the minutes could theoretically be produced in 48 or 72 hours, how long would the approval process take in the current climate? Because I think you guys did a great job in writing the minutes, but then the turnaround time from CCP is much longer than it was even a couple of years ago.
Well, that's always the trick. Christmas, yeah. Holidays help with that.
No, I mean, just even in the general sense.
Right. So, should we move on? We've got a lot of other topics to cover.
Yeah, let's
Well, I do want to bring up one other point, because you did bring up transition, and one of the things CSM5 did that I thought was just fantastic was they produced a term retrospective document that was kind of mostly intended for CSM8, but was also kind of an open letter to the players. It was something that Minxy wrote, primarily Minxy, and put out there, and I just thought it was a lovely document, and I hope you guys will do something similar.
Sort of the envelope on the president's desk kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
I completely forgot about that, but I'm just found it on Google again and downloaded it. I'll reread it. Maybe. I know that I'm going to write a retrospective blog. Mike Azariah, I don't know if you guys remember him.
Yeah, I know Mike.
Yeah, he asked us a series of questions for use in one of his blog posts. And I took a look at the post, and he used, like, a bare fraction. I wrote him, like, a mini novel. Because, I don't know, I was just feeling in a writey mood, and his questions made me think about some stuff. And since he didn't use a whole lot of my answers, I think I'm just going to take what I wrote him and then update it for what's going on in January and February, and maybe ship that as a farewell blog, since I'm not going to be running again.
Yeah, definitely.
Spill it out on the tear-stained pages of Dear Diary.
Dear Diary, CCP Unifex is so dreamy. That would be if Celine ghost wrote my thing. He's got
That's
a man crush on John Lander.
You guys want to jump to NullSec?
I would be fine with skipping the white paper. I think election systems chat is stupid.
Well, yeah, I do want to talk about it. But if for no other reason than because I have Mina here and Goonswarm is a frequent player in this discussion. But I think if for purposes of keeping the narrative flowing, let's jump to NullSec for right now. Because this was another... I mean, if the stakeholder thing was resentment, this was all out open warfare.
Yeah, I guess Elise wrote both of these sections, and it's very clear that he worked really hard to kind of try to strip some of the emotion out of these two sessions, not entirely successfully.
Yeah, there was one line in here, I'll find it, but after much disagreement, like we just moved on, unproductive disagreement, I think is what he said.
Yeah, section one had the atmosphere was notably tense at that point. Line.
Right.
Yeah, after my favorite person on Iceland had his say on pauses.
Oh, here's one. After some unconstructive pause-related banter. Well, that was like 15 minutes of shouting.
I
believe it.
Yeah, I mean, we came in planning to fight for Pass, but John Lander shut that down, or tried to anyway.
I don't know if what he was saying is just like he didn't realize how important it is to the players, or just bad messaging, or what, but
it was mostly bad messaging.
Whatever it was, it's been made abundantly clear, I think, by the players that it isn't exactly a welcome attitude.
I think you're referring to Soundwave's statement, not Unifex.
No, specifically the bit about how he thinks that it would only affect a few players.
Right, that was Soundwave.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Just to put this, the NullSec section, in context, because it's very interesting reading the summit minutes in the order that they're presented, because that next 10 years section, I mean, that is so telling, and there's so much undercurrent going on in that section. It's very interesting how clear it kind of lays out Unifex's perspective. He brings up the Apocrypha expansion 11 times in that one session, and that's just what's written down. I mean, it's remarkable how many times he just comes back to that and comes back to that. And it's, you know, he kind of frames it in terms of Apocrypha had the total package, in terms of it had PvE, it had new space, it had new things to fight over, it had PvP, it had new ships, and he's absolutely right, but it had one other thing. It brought thousands of new players into the game. And I think his concern is, I mean, it comes out pretty clearly to me, but I think his concern is, even if CCP did do passes, it's not going to bring any new players into the game.
I did have a thing with Soundwave. That was where Soundwave was first responded to Alec. On top of that, Soundwave added the pause system by itself would only affect a small portion of the community. So that was Soundwave. Okay, it looks so like Unifex said something similar as well.
But that's the line everyone latched onto then.
And
at
it's
the
funny
time,
because
it felt more like intense coming from Soundwave. Like having been there, maybe it's just because he was talking to me directly, but.
It's a funny line to me, and it's going to be my quote of the week on Monday, obviously. And it's one of those funny lines because I joke on my blog about my ability to believe two contradictory things at once. Soundwave, with that line, has said something which is absolutely true and patently false in the same line. It's really remarkable.
The interesting thing about it is, I mean, I know you and, frankly, a lot of us have our issues with Grayscale, but his presentation at the Alliance tournament, where he was talking about how much he wants everyone to want a POS, just completely clashes with this idea of, yeah, this won't help anyone, or this won't be interesting enough to enough players.
I think what it comes down to is, for Unifex's perspective, what it came down to from follow-up discussions I've had with him is the development process that was laid out in the next decade stuff, they're really committed to that. And by really committed, it's like to the exclusion of all other concerns. And that means scrapping any previous development plans for 2013, which included POS. Now, they're not saying that they're not going to not touch POSs at all, but the idea that you're spending an entire expansion cycle on one particular feature or one particular area clashes with the new way of business, basically.
Which plays back into the idea that it's really just bad messaging.
It's definitely right. Bad messaging.
Well, it's bad messaging either way you cut it. Like I said, we were first finding rumors about this in November. I think the second they made the decision that this was off the table, or was least all going to be in flux, they should have come out ahead and talked to the players about it.
I completely agree. I don't want to get overly dramatic, but it almost felt like Unifex was saying, we can spend all spring, working on POSs and deliver the most glorious POS expansion ever in the summer, and if Eve is dead by winter, it's not going to have mattered what we spent the spring and summer doing.
If you want to put hyperbole onto it, yeah.
I think that's pretty much the message generally. Yeah, I don't want to be overly dramatic, but that's kind of what the subtext felt like.
Yeah, now I can't actually fault them for wanting to sort of scrape and start clean with their new development process. It's not an unreasonable desire.
No, absolutely. It's almost actually kind of refreshing to see CCP think long term, because they've been so focused on 60 days in the future for so long now.
I think the possible gains of getting CCP to actually plan expansions ahead, even two expansions ahead, compared to how they do it, or how they have done it in the past couple of years, I think that's worth a little upheaval.
Absolutely.
I agree, but I think the thing I disagree with is I think trying to start that process this year or this summer expansion, I think
I don't
a
think
mistake.
They are.
Well, they kind
from,
of are.
Unifex from says from it, reading Trevor's thing, kind of a between the lines reading, it sounds like you guys in the CSM, and you can confirm or deny this as you will or are able, it sounds like you guys were given a grab bag of features and said, pick from this, because they're trying to keep it small to make sure that their new system works, and then they can start thinking big in winter or next summer.
Yeah, well, Unifex says right in the minutes that they're looking at a mini theme for the summer expansion.
I'll Did he?
I must have missed that.
Yeah, it's right in the minutes.
It's like they're doing a test run, and they want to make sure that whatever feature set they put into it is actually achievable in that time. Because they're also having to do the planning for winter now as well. Developing a plan is cool, but you have to have time to develop a plan.
That
process is happening now, which means the summer expansion is not a rush job, but they don't have a lot of time to screw around. So whatever is being included, it has to be achievable in a short time frame.
Which means things that have been sort of worked on in the background or what have you. We've got this nice feature we worked on in our spare time idea in our spare time or whatever.
Yeah, the last three expansions have clearly been, okay, we're working on these 15 things. Which 10 of them can we have done by release date?
Yeah, and I think trying to move them away from that is good. I wasn't happy to see bosses put on the chopping block, but right now my focus is on getting a POS little things fix, something that'll solve the glaring issues without requiring a complete relook at the entire feature into whatever theme is going to go on for this.
Yeah, because the other thing that's pretty clear when Unifex compares it to CrimeWatch is I think they looked at the POS code, said this junk is going to have to be scrapped and rewritten from the ground up, looked at the calendar, said, you know, we're not going to have time, and that's what kind of started this soul searching. Because he deliberately compared the POS code to CrimeWatch, and just, you know, the fact that a lot of players kind of bitched, you know, this is all we're getting is CrimeWatch, but CrimeWatch is such a great platform to build a lot of different things on.
And CrimeWatch took a year. It's released on a Retribution, but if you remember back to the previous expansion, like, a lot of the background CrimeWatch stuff was being put in at the time.
Yeah, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at Singularity today, but just to get players excited, there are five new ships on Singularity today.
Oh yeah, I saw
just
them.
Just three words: pirate noob ships.
And the Gnosis, which is interesting.
Well, the Gnosis is, I mean, it's pretty clear that that's going to be the 10th anniversary present. But the thing I'm excited about is pirate noob ships. That puts an implication out there that I just love.
No argument there.
There's a lot of other stuff in the 00 session if you guys want to go into that. Turtle, go ahead.
I was going to say for that first part, other than the blow up of POS, it's pretty much just all the same reasons we've been hearing about NullSec.
Yeah. That,
I mean.
Like, it's lucky that the CSM Skype doesn't get recorded for minutes, because holy shit. When he asked us to go around and, like, talk about the three or five things that we think were important, we were getting very agitated. Keldoom threw up his hands. He's like, I yield my time on this fucking thing. Celine, his outburst was very much scrub for tone when it went into the minutes. I didn't even want to talk. I was glad that it got shut down before it came to me, because I probably would have just flew off the handle that this was going on. But
yeah, I mean,
we had the part two
go ahead.
Thing as a direct result.
Well, yeah, what part one tells me is, like, everyone has different ideas. No surprises there. And, I mean, some of my own ideas are a matter of record and aren't exactly, I don't want to say incompatible with everyone else's ideas, but they would be a little bit different. I think in part two, though, CCP and Soundwave did a pretty good job of distilling all those ideas down to themes, almost.
Yeah, part one strikes me as remarkable for how little CCP talks. There's, I mean, other than the grayscale line, there's almost no indication that CCP reps were saying anything during the part one session. Part two strikes me, and again, the emotion just comes really just shining through, even though Elise did its very best to scrub it, as you guys yelling almost at the top of your lungs at CCP for about 15 minutes before they said, you know, before the rest of the part two session is, okay, let me make sure we understand that we are hearing what you're saying.
Ironically, part two, I don't know if we were just punched out at that point or what, but because there was a lot of conflict in the dust sessions as well, but we were just like, all right, let's see what they got.
Well, I mean, the text at least shows they were listening to you, which is something.
Yeah, I thought more progress was made in the part two session than in any session on 00 since CSM. Well, since I was on, for sure, before.
Now, that some said, the go ahead.
Some of the, you know, yeah, I agree that it sounds like they were listening, although I hope some of the "we're listening" was them just trying to probe rather than just being completely clueless. Because some of the questions made me just bury my head on the desk.
Yep, I agree.
Whatever it is.
Like, would infinite production slots or infinite tritanium be enough from Grayscale?
Grayscale. Like,
really?
Infinite tritanium from Mina, more like it.
No, it was infinite production slots. I'm like, oh, would that be enough? Oh, come on.
No.
It yeah, definitely wouldn't, and I think everybody involved knows it wouldn't. Questions like that
I hope
are...
everyone involved knows that it wouldn't.
Right, you'd hope. Questions like that are weird. Like, on one hand, I give CCP the benefit of the doubt. Like, they're just trying to, you know, ask questions without belying their own assumptions, maybe. But if you don't give them the benefit of the doubt, it's like, wow, you really just don't connect with the experiences of your players in this feature. That has to do with CCP employees not being allowed to go so far up the food chain of player organizations because of T20 and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, is that they're not playing at a high enough level to get it.
Well, it's funny. I mean, Alec, you said earlier that they had scrapped their previous development strategies, and there's a lot of crap that is obviously being flushed down the toilet when that happens, but there's a lot of good stuff, too. I mean, I make a lot of jokes about Grayscale, but he filled a whiteboard with a lot of things that made sense for how to change NullSec and, you know, put that whiteboard picture in a dev blog, and now that seems to have just been totally forgotten, and it's like they're starting from scratch.
Are you talking about that August 2011 blog?
That's the one.
I like that one.
I know. It had a lot of good ideas, and it's like they've... You know, it's like their 10-second Tom from that one Adam Sandler movie. They've completely forgotten all of the good ideas they had and want to restart from scratch again.
Yeah, that was frustrating as well. Like, they had there was that blog from Sandwave, there was the Grayscale posts asking for basically feedback on the various parts of Farms and Fields. And that went nowhere. Like, there's no evidence of any lasting impression from that process anywhere, which I found and do find shocking, but it's more of, well, where do we go from here? And I think that question has pretty much dominated a lot of what CSM7 has had to go through when it comes to CCP's decision-making process.
I can tell you one place we're not going from here. We're not going to a POS expansion. I mean, you know, God bless all the people posting in that thread, but I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I think CCP is committed.
Well, John Lander made it clear that it's not going to happen. Like, doing an expansion about POS is not going to be happening. The best that people can hope for is that some POS
that's not
going to
make people happy
goes into an expansion.
Well, I was in Jita earlier today. There's exactly one guy shooting at the statue.
One lone dude. Like that protester guy that lives out on the White House lawn.
I do have to say that I'm actually very pleased that the tone of that thread has been nice and civil and that players have kept it low-key.
Yeah, I agree there.
I mean, there are valid times for rioting, but this isn't it. Yet, maybe.
Yeah, it's the yet part, I think. Definitely right now, there is no point. There's no point to getting mad because they haven't completely excluded the possibility of working on POS from their minds. So as long as the potential is out there and the planning process is ongoing, which it is right now, then Jita riots have no purpose.
The thing I can, and this is going to come out when I actually write the blog about, you know, where I think they're going to go with this, the thing I can kind of see them doing is writing a second set of POS code in parallel with the existing POS code. So we're going to have these long stick-shaped POSs with shields out there, but then we're also going to have some kind of brand new POS that you're also going to be able to anchor on moons, where they're going to start developing all of the things that they want to have done with modular POSs, and the two sets of code are going to run side by side for maybe a year or so before they finally say, okay, we've got everything. We think we have everything in the new POSs. Now we can scrap the old POS code.
With just the size of the problem, I mean, that virtually guarantees that that's the way they'd have to do it if they want to at all. You can't just tell players, you know, yeah, you've got a month, tear down all your shit and put up new ones.
Yeah, but, I mean, if you look at that graphic, I mean, I joked about this, where it shows pauses going from summer to winter to summer to winter to summer to winter. That's like 2.5 years, but I think that's going to be the strategy they're eventually going to have to come down on.
Yeah, I agree.
What did you guys think about the stuff that got talked about, like, at the Alliance level? Because the general tone I got from it was that everybody... the general trend of the conversation was that, you know, things like formalizing coalitions and that kind of upward movement of grouping people together was kind of the goal, like, was the path we were headed down. Or I would, personally, I'd like to see that broken down. I'd love to see it almost impossible logistically and flat-out cost to run an alliance the size of Tester Goon Swarm.
I'm gonna be half joking and half serious in my answer. I think CCP is looking forward to having a goon on the CSM again, so they have somebody who can, you know. I know Divinian is out there. I know UAX Death is out there, but they don't have anybody on this current CSM that is really kind of plugged into that. I think they're looking forward to having my buddy Mina here in the room so they can really pick his brain.
Nope. I hope so. Although to any CCP employees listening, my brain is available to pick anytime you want.
Not having a goon on the CSM was a big detriment. Especially when the goon in question was Mitani. I would have loved to have had him available for a lot of what was going on. But
That was a Greek fucking tragedy is what that was.
like I said, well, what do we do now? Pretty much from day one on the CSM-7, that was the case. You know, our chairman just got banned. Well, what do we do now?
With regards to your question, I don't know about formalizing coalitions, but a lot of what they were talking about, sort of spitballing with regards to formalizing alliances, giving them the option of alliance-level control and alliance-level taxation and whatnot, I don't think corp-level stuff would... There's no way it should go away at all, but if you just look at it from a metagame perspective, that gives the tools for a wider type of alliance. It would let you formalize the dictatorial type of alliances, like how we run Goon Swarm versus the council or democratic type of alliances versus... Shit, I don't even know if any of those exist anymore, but you get the idea.
Yeah, but on the other hand, to look at the other side of this, there are at most 100 people playing EVE that are worried about this or have a reason to care about it.
It would only affect a small portion of the community, Riffard?
Well, yeah, but in this case, in this case, it's actually true.
I'm not sure I agree. I mean, there's plenty of relatively smaller alliances out there that may find such tools beneficial.
Alliances out there which would benefit from both sides of it, having more ability to control themselves and then changing the way that the bigger players have to think about their own membership. That'll have some spillover effect on how they deal with the rest of the game.
Yeah, while I agree with that, you design the system for the people who have to use it the most.
That's a good point. There was one specific in there. They talked about control of taxation of in stations and whatnot, which I think someone said that it's possible, and it's actually not. We have no control over our broker fees. But at least to us, in the sort of bottom-up income world, post-Farms and Field, that's like the holy grail.
I think that's what it comes down to. You
market
just mentioned
taxes
that.
And VFK would be like the new technetium for us. We wouldn't need means.
You basically hit it on the head there. It's sort of a parallel process. You want to have alliance management be able to be more top-down, have the option to be more top-down, and have alliance income be able to be more bottom-up.
Yeah,
and if
absolutely.
Those two things happen at once, I think that's a very transformative effect, not just on the people that run those organizations, but on the people that live in them and the rest of the game that has to interact with them.
Definitely agree. I mean, I get asked a lot, you know, what would you do to let the little guy compete in NullSec? And my first answer is, you know, bottom-up income with some sort of thing so that the large guys aren't necessarily obliged to hold, like, 3 regions.
Yeah, I'd love to have Mina on Rogue Capel Team Speak sometime, because the Rogue guys, you know, like myself, a lot of us are, you know, Sov War players that are just so cynical about the way the system is right now. I mean, Rote took one system as an April Fool's Day joke. Not last year, but the year before last. But if we tried to do it in earnest, we would be stomped so quickly and so hard that it wouldn't be funny.
Yeah, well, now, the other side of that is I'm not sure that you can do anything to prevent that. Like, maybe you can, but there's a lot of things that get into shitting in the sandbox. Like, hey, let's have soft structures in an arena that's limited by player size or something.
Well, there needs to be some place for small independent players.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Given the reshaping how space is used so that that opportunity is there is a very good first start.
Then you can start to think about,
you know, how can the smaller guys not instantly get crushed if the big guys are bored?
Right.
It would add so much content to NullSec, just because I know there are 1,000 alliances out there that would love to have just, you know, one system or two systems or three systems that are never going to have that the way the current mechanic is designed.
Yeah, actually, this reminds me of something. There was a line in there, Two-Step brought up the destructible stations thing. That runs completely counter to the idea of let the small guys get out there.
Exactly.
Because if you give them small stations, we will come in and blow them up just for the fun of it.
Yep.
Totally. Well,
I don't know about that, because if you... I mean, theoretically, yes. But if you look at the actual state of the game, there are so many stations that have outposts in them. Or, excuse me, so many systems that have outposts in them. It's tactically beneficial to have an outpost. Outposts can form the launching point for invasions. But if more systems without outposts than with them, then it's a little bit less of a strategic motivation for an alliance to go in there and stomp someone out. But if they now... If that, like, new alliance comes in and takes a station system, then it's a station system that the regional owner doesn't control. And that's a little bit more...
I'm a little bit cynical on this subject because I know a lot of people bitch that there are too many outposts in NullSec, and I think there are too few. If we're not playing this game as a part of, you know, kind of develop, you know, space, almost kind of Sim City kind of game where some people own New York City and some people own Podunk, Iowa, then what are we playing the NullSec game for?
Yeah, I know some people don't like that. I know don't like that style of play. There's the Empire Builders. That's great. I know Susan Black and had a blog post the other day that kind of mirrored what the very forgettable Against All Authorities representative said, Green or something, about, you know, does it always have to be build your empire sovereignty type of gameplay? Which I don't think it does. You could have the two systems coexisting. You know, if the people want to build giant empires and monuments to their hubris and all that great stuff, cool. If they want to have a little, you know, mining settlement in NullSec or whatever, great. You don't have to go down, wouldn't necessarily have to go down the Sov route for that. It's an interesting concept.
Well, I keep coming back to there should be a place for the small players. I'm not smart enough to know how EVE gets there, but I would love to see an EVE where you've got your United States, your Russia, your China, you know, the Goon Swarm, the Test Alliance, existing side by side with second tier players like, you know, France, Germany, Venezuela, Brazil, existing side by side with third tier players like Mali and Yemen and Algeria. And some of those countries are, you know, like Yemen, that throw out little bands of pirates from time to time. I would love to cross NullSec space and cross 50 borders over the course of a, you know, of a realm instead of two borders.
I can't disagree with that.
How we get there, nice. I don't know, but I would love to see EVE as that.
Yeah, the how we get there is a huge thing, and whether we're going to be able to get there is another thing, because, I mean, Soundwave's assertions to the contrary, like, oh, it's on the roadmap now. They haven't built their roadmap yet. You know, it's going to take involvement from players, involvement from the CSM, and advocates within CCP to make sure that this actually goes somewhere.
Shall we move on to ship balancing?
Let's tackle the white paper real quick. Since you guys now can't bitch at it on the sidelines, you're going to be involved in it.
my take on the whole section, we're going to get a new voting system, whether we like it or not, or at least CCP is going to build the infrastructure to support it. I mean, Zegan was clear about that. They've got the web development time now, so they're going to put it in place.
I will expand that to say that we're going to see some version of the single transferable vote system. What exactly it's going to look like, I don't know, but that's what we're going to have.
At the end of the day, though, I mean, I recognize CCP's reasons for it. Great, you want diversity on the CSM. I don't care. As long as it's not being overtly designed to punish organization, you know, nerf organization is overpowered. As long as it's not being overtly designed to try to punish that sort of thing, whatever, do whatever you want. I don't care.
I am going to bitch at CSM 7 slightly, though, in that I still would have taken some kind of outline to Exhagen about the CSM's internal organization, how the CSM should be internally organized. You know, should the chair automatically be the top vote getter, or should the chair be voted in? Should there be a process for voting members off the island? And if so, what should be? And I agree with that.
With the survivor thing specifically, yeah, that's a bad idea.
We've made that suggestion to him previously as well.
I firmly believe
the chair should be voted by the CSM.
I would have been a lot happier had the CSM come to Iceland with a draft of that in hand. You know, this is how we think it should work. And, you know, even if you guys just focused on the internal CSM mechanics, such as, you know, how should the chair be voted in? You know, should there be a mandated number of meetings? You know, what should the meetings be about? Should there be a mandated number of town halls, et cetera, et cetera? You guys could have done the work for how the CSM should operate internally, and I was kind of disappointed you didn't. And that turned that session into basically just a repeat of the last two sessions. You know, the CSM just basically kind of sitting around talking about stuff that should have been settled long before you guys arrived in Iceland.
Well, probably would have done something like that if the blowback hadn't been so harsh for Trooper's attempt at tackling the voting system. Basically, no one in the CSM wanted to touch anything without Exhagen, because that's the overwhelming response of players the one time that anybody tried.
Well, fine. It's not like you don't have access to... It's not like you don't have access to Exhagen, you know, full time. I mean, we keep getting told that the CSM is Exhagen's full time job. No, I don't believe that, but that's what we keep getting told.
I don't know who tells you that, but we are not.
I think it said somewhere that Eve was his full time job. I thought I read.
No, that's Unifex. Exhagen is the CSM's liaison, and kind of he holds the flag for their stakeholder status.
Basically, the entire goal for that meeting was to get him to commit to doing something by the end of the month. Month being January.
I was about to say the end of what month?
Yeah. So, the whole thing was a rhetorical song and dance to try to get him to agree to do changes to the paper, finally update them, and agree to do, since he's doing changes to the paper, the voting system in some way. And we will see. At the moment, we still don't have anything from him. But between the CSM minutes finally getting... Because he's the person that runs people down to say, hey, you have to sign off on this, you have to sign off on this, you have to sign off on this. So we can actually put them out. Now that that's done, his next task is basically this. And we have to see what's going to happen there.
Well, by my count, he has 35 work days to get that done.
35 work days?
A little sooner.
Well, no, I would fully expect to see the dev blog about how the CSM election is going to happen by about February 25th. That's 5 weeks away.
Yeah. Hopefully it won't
take
that long.
Makes sense.
I think much like the 00 sessions, a lot of the ideas have been repeated. Now it's time for CCP to act. As for the voting people off the island thing, maybe not kick them off, but I'll set it in the minutes, I'll say it again. Every elected body in human civilization has had some way to police their members' behavior beyond some agreed-upon standard. That the CSM doesn't have this is really ridiculous.
That's true. but this is Eve.
Yeah, it's. I was just about to say the same thing in a different way. It's funny how the sandbox has permeated the CSM, and you've got CSM members who want to play the CSM as a sandbox in their own way. The another section where emotion was wonderfully suppressed by whoever wrote the section was when Mesa showed up and wanted to start talking and make contributions, and it was, I forget the exact line, but the response of the rest of the CSM to this was just classic.
Yeah, people were not pleased.
Yeah, XDeath has a point, though. I mean, if you whether it's CSM itself or, you know, a vote of no confidence by the player base or what have you, if you open up that sort of thing, it will get metagamed.
I don't know that I'm 100% convinced about that. Because there's no meta advantage to the CSM right now. Aside from the bully
that may be true, but there are players who think so.
Yeah, but those players don't tend to actually make it onto the council. And those that do tend to be the ones that the rest of the council would probably kick off if they could, because they don't do anything.
I didn't necessarily say that. I was talking about the council.
Yeah, I found it two-step. It bothered me no end yesterday when Mesa dialed in and talked because he hasn't earned the right to talk. Wow. So yeah, you've got CSM members playing the CSM like a sandbox. I mean, Darius III is obviously out there doing his thing.
Is
couple
he?
Other members.
Well, I mean,
has he been spotted outside? No one informed me. The guy is so useless. Oh my god.
Well, I think that goes back and speaks to the voting reform, and that it can only be about raw numbers to some degree. Like, there's going to have to be some compromise for the sake of the CSM, because...
You could change the rules, and people like that are still going to play the game. He's going to be in Jita. If we do a single transferable vote where everybody has a first choice, second choice, third choice, he's going to be in Jita saying... I'll give you 3 plexes if you make me your first choice, 2 plexes if you make me your second, and 1 plex if you make me your third.
Yeah.
Well, that's something CCP needs to recognize, too. The system will always be game.
I think of the tangible things, even beyond, say, Darius, having some way for the CSM to determine who gets to sit at the table.
Now that discussion I thought was very valuable. I thought it was terrific that I forget exactly who said it, but very ironically enough, but just the fact of the idea of the CSM and CCP kind of picking and choosing who should go to Iceland. Now I fully agree with Hans in that choice should not be made based on the subjects that are going to be talked about necessarily, but it should be, you know, I hesitate to use the word reward because, you know, two-step is part of the reason he's dropping out is because he spent literally every vacation day he had last year this past year going to Iceland. So I hesitate to use the word reward, but it definitely should be associated with people who do the actual work of the body rather
think
than,
about it like this. If you're a CCP dev, you know, you're a team leader, you've been posting on the forums, you've been talking on Skype, you've been working with the CSM. Who are you more likely to, you know, sit down at a conference table and really engage with? Someone who you've been working with back and forth over the, you know, course of a couple months that you've been dealing with the CSM and they've been giving you feedback and having conversations with you? Or some random nerd that you haven't really exchanged 5 words with till now, and now here he is in front of you expecting you to take him seriously?
Well, and that's just it, is like, the most effective, important work you guys are going to do on the CSM is going to be done at those summits. Like, you need to have people there that are actually going to, like, participate. You know, the topics that come up, while they shouldn't inherently be a reason for going, like, they're going to come into consideration. You know, if you're really active in something like factional warfare and you talk a lot about it, you know a lot about it, if that's a major issue, you know, that's going to come into consideration with you going. But if you play a lot of factional warfare but don't do dick all outside of the game, like, that in itself should be a reason that you shouldn't go, because you're not going to, like, participate. I mean, that just seems to make sense. Like, you're spending the money to take them over there. It's their opportunity to do the real, raw work that you can only do in person. Like, have these really difficult discussions and yelling arguments that just aren't the same over Skype.
And do some of the fucking minutes. Now, I love Death. I think he's hilarious, and I think he, ironically, is one of the best orators for 00 and what's good about it that you can have. But seriously,
I liked a lot of what he said.
Yeah, how can you argue with it? Eve should be a cold, dark place. The way he went out onto the whiteboard and like laid the smackdown on Soundwave, like, this part of the game is broken, this part of the game is broken, this part of the game is broken. You can't just touch one of these things and expect everything to be fine. On the other hand, foreign language communities, you should probably pick not just a representative, but a representative that can write fluently in the language, because that's what most of the conversation is. It's not just going to the summits and speaking, it's writing in forums, talking in Skype, and then doing the minute work. So you will be better represented by somebody that can do all those things in English consistently. I wish we could clone Death and then raise his clone in America, indoctrinate him properly in the ways of capitalism and freedom. And
well, the whole point to the CSN is to have a lot of different viewpoints. I mean, I 100% agree with you, but you know, there does need to be a place at the table for people who play the game in, you know, in that way.
Absolutely. I'm just saying that, you know, now that, because I don't think Death, I'm not sure if Death is running or not. I don't think Greenlee will be running. But
even
those
if Greenlee does run, I don't think he's getting on.
Right. Those groups, when you pick your guy, that should probably be part of what you're keeping in mind, his ability to communicate with other English speakers.
Well, I think...
Now, both of their written English, or their spoken English is fine, and frankly, I think Death's written English is better than he gives himself credit for. But, can't really help with the names.
Again, you know, there is a whole Russian community playing this game. I understand, I would love to find it. I would love for somebody to send me a link to it. I understand there was a Russian version of the minutes that was published in Russian. Not these minutes, but the A-Summit minutes. There was a version of them published in Russian for the Russian-speaking players. And amusingly enough, you know, I've heard that the text of those minutes was slightly different from the official version, with, you know, things of more concern and more note to the Russian community. The other thing we're going to have to watch out for this year, you know, we've got a fairly significant Japanese player base playing EVE, and we might see a Japanese CSM candidate or three.
Yeah, I think Greenlee mentioned that, I think. It might have
been
him.
Yeah, it got brought up. It did, yes.
Like, that's going to be interesting to see if they organize. I haven't actually interacted much with an actual, like, Japanese alliance or corp yet, so I don't know where that community is in terms of their maturity in the game.
We're starting to see a little bit of them in LoSec and in some of the NullSec areas. I play, you know, as you know, late at night and almost into the AUTZ, which coincidentally is the Japanese TZ, and we're starting to see them.
It would be very cool to see if they... I mean, I think it's only really... It's not if, it's when they'll become a block. But I don't know that it's going to happen this time around, but perhaps in the next CSN election, the one after this, they could become a thing. This is going to take some time for them to like have leaders emerge and
be able
to coalesce around one person to put on. I don't think they'll be able to get enough people just numbers-wise unless they unify their vote. So to have one leader emerge from the community, it takes time.
Yeah, fair enough.
They could always read a map upside down that worked for helping tests growth. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's
hit ship balancing, and I think that'll be it. So ship balancing is happening.
I have such a hard on for Fozzie.
He's doing great work. I know a lot of people are kind of hating on the battlecruiser changes, like they don't feel big enough or something. But then again, a lot of the cruisers were in sorry ass shape, and so bringing them up to being good is a huge change. Whereas the battlecruisers are more of a mostly tweaks here and there.
Well, I'm going to call it here now. Alliance Tournament 11, you may as well call it Cruiser Tournament.
Probably true.
Yeah, maybe. Although I think the Cyclone changes were really good.
I agree. The Cyclone's going
to
be awesome.
I love the Cyclone. I mean, I've written plenty about why I like it. It's a sixth launcher would be dumb. The utility it still has is great. That's what gives the ship its flavor compared to everything else.
That's, and the utility that, focuses in on what's supposed to be great about the Mimitar, their versatility.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
That said, I mean, there were two or three BCs that were unquestionably, you know, if you rate ships on a scale of 1 to 10, there were two or three BCs that were unquestionably 9s or 10s that are being nerfed down to 7 or 8s. And, you know, the former Tier 1s are also being kind of pushed up to 7 or 8s. So other than the Cyclone, I don't think there's going to be a lot of standouts among those 8 battlecruisers, which, by ironic default, is going to leave, you know, the current Tier 3s as the unquestioned kings of battlecruisers.
The Seraph is looking great, and the Prophecy is looking great.
The Tier 3s are getting their nerfs, too. They're going to get hit on the mobility, at least. There's no question about that.
I think they're going to get hit on the mobility, and I, from, you know, reading between the lines, it's really looking like they're going to get either some kind of tracking nerf or the same kind of when shooting at small targets nerf that the Titans have currently.
Yeah, so.
I think generally speaking, Signature Radius needs to play a bigger role in the damage level. But
This is another system where, you know, sooner or later we would need a combat expansion where they just rip up all of the current, you know, combat math and rebuild all of that math from scratch, because it really needs to be looked at.
It would be nice. You're talking about a big undertaking.
I'm talking about probably the second or third biggest undertaking ever taken in the history of EVE, but sooner or later it has to happen.
And it has been mentioned off and on, you know, as a thing, but I don't know, more of a pipe dream in my head, but every time they bring it up, it's something that I strongly advise them to do. It's really just a question of when they feel like biting that bullet, and if they're not willing to bite the possible, I don't know if they'll be waiting to make biting this bullet anytime soon. I just don't see it.
I 100% agree with you, but again, it has to be done sooner or later.
Better than dealing with billboards, right?
What?
The billboards are one of those classic long-standing examples. Yeah, you'd think something as simple as that would be whatever, but nope, apparently they don't have a fucking clue how they work anymore.
Oh, really? That's ironic.
But yeah, other than that, I don't have a whole lot to say about ship balancing. I mean, it's very clear that Fozzy and Yitterbeam and the rest of the team there are proceeding very slowly, very carefully. It's going to be 2015 before they get to, you know, all of the ships. I mean, I think it's great that they're at least tweaking Black Ops now. I mean, it's definitely not the whole Bible, but at least it's a chapter or two.
You can thank CSM7 for that one, too.
My Redeemer thanks you. But, you know, it's pretty clear that they're trying to be very slow, very careful, really, you know, engage the community at each step in the process, which I think is great. But it also means that, you know, a lot of the most common fleet ships, you know, aren't going to be touched this year. We're going to have to wait for 2014 for, you know, things like hacks and interceptors and, you know, EAFs, you know, ships that either desperately need a looking at, or ships that are the core of a lot of current fleets.
I don't disagree that it's been a slow process. Compared to what they initially laid out as their timeline, I think they've really accelerated that, mostly because of Fozzy, and hopefully because we've been asking them to accelerate it and prioritize the ship balancing thing every time they've come to the CSN and talked about it.
Even with the acceleration, it's going to be a slow process. It's going to run from the end of 2011 to the end of 2015. By any measure, that's a long time.
Well, there's a lot to look at. I was actually surprised to hear February 12th for the battlecruisers. I wasn't expecting them until March.
Yeah, I was encouraged by the fact that they're putting the battlecruisers out on a point release and not waiting until another major expansion to do more ship balancing changes.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, no, I was expecting March on those, and then battleships in the summer, just like they apparently planned, but February is very, very much earlier than anticipated.
Which signals to me maybe we might get something else. Something small, perhaps, in between February and the battleship changes. Probably nothing huge, but maybe a like sort of what they're doing to Black Ops, but to maybe something like TAC frigates.
Like command ships and T-3s?
Perhaps command ships. I don't know, they're talking a lot about command ships and T-3s, but we haven't seen any timeline as to when that might be on the table.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to be this year.
Probably sometime in 2013, yeah. Because it feels like it's close to done.
And
conceptually, anyway.
The other subject on ship balancing that has to be considered is this 20% thing, you know, where the T2 versions of ships are going to be, you know, quote unquote 20% better than the T1s. You know, right now those T2 ships are 5 times more expensive than the T1s. So it's going to be kind of an interesting commentary on EVE players have too much money, you know, when we get those rebalanced T2s and you have to pay 5 times as much for 20% better.
Well, that's always been CCP's stated philosophy, though, is that you do not get a linear increase in power relative to your increase in cost or whatever.
Well,
Soundwave puts it more eloquently than that.
Yeah, I get that, but I think there's still going to be an expectation among the players that has to be reset on in terms of if the Thorax is this good, I can't wait to see what they're going to do to the Deimos.
Well,
yeah.
So CCP hasn't done anything to encourage that perception.
They don't have to. That perception is out there all by itself.
Well, then it's the player's fault, not theirs.
Yeah, but at this, I mean, we were talking about bad messaging earlier, right? Even if CCP isn't messaging, there's still not addressing a incorrect expectation might be a bad idea. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
They need
to reset that
at
expectation.
Every opportunity. You know, you can't blame CCP for player unwillingness to listen to them when they say that.
I would still love to see Fozzy in a video dev blog just making that blatantly clear.
I guarantee some players will still not know about it afterward.
And that's fine, but they have not done a good enough job yet of getting that message out there. It's been in Alliance Tournament interstitials, and it's been in CSM minutes, and it's been hidden in dev blogs that a lot of players don't read. You know, they need to get the message out there a lot more directly.
Maybe we should do it for them and write pieces in our respective fora.
Well, I mean, we can do it, but CCP has to be out there resetting that expectation.
Yeah, no, definitely. We can only hope that as Tech 2 rebalancing draws closer, they start doing that. It'd be a dumb thing to say rioting over.
I think they need to do it before that. I think they need to kind of start the messaging. I mean, they're inserting the messaging now, as I said, into these little kind of side pockets where some players will see it. But I think if they wait for, you know, hi guys, you know, here's the dev blog on hacks, they're going to get another thread knot over it.
I doubt the outrage of that.
I don't know about thread knot, but there will be people who don't get it. Yeah, exactly. It's counterintuitive.
And people, like, if they're buffing the T1 crew, oh, they're so good now. But if everything got buffed, then nothing would change. You know what I mean? I think players will understand that.
I think they'll understand if it's explained to them.
Maybe we're just both bitter vets, but I don't have that much faith in EVE players. That they'll just get it. Yeah, if it's explained, that's one thing. But
because the thing that I keep coming back to on this is these new cruisers, these new frigates, and to a somewhat lesser extent, these new battle cruisers are all about giving more power to new players. If those new players go out there and then spend 6 weeks, 8 weeks training the skills for Hack 5, they're definitely going to expect to see a better ship than they're likely to get for that 6 or 8 weeks of training.
That's a fair point. All right. We're running a little long, so let's wrap it up. I want to hear you guys give some closing thoughts on the minutes and closing thoughts on, let's say, CSM7 in general as we go into this planning phase for the summer expansion, which frankly is a really cool thing that no CSM has got to do. We're going to see what the outcome of it all is probably sooner rather than later, but you know, obviously recording it now on the 19th of January, we're not going to be able to. But both of you are running, and Riphard in particular has been a frequent critic. So
there's an understatement.
That's okay. I've been a critic, but I've been positive where it's been appropriate to do so, too.
You're not, though. Well, that's right.
Duh. Well, few people are. Poe, Glenn Beck, and, I don't know, Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, Poe taught me that it's okay to make Hitler jokes. You just gotta say Adolf instead of Hitler. then it's okay.
Yeah, I wrote a little blog post comparing CSM7 to Game of Thrones characters, and I had somebody just brilliantly say, does that make you Dany Daenerys? Who, for people who don't follow Game of Thrones, is this kind of rebel that's, you know, living well away from the continent and, you know, planning to conquer it all.
Oh, well, speaking of, Rivard, since you've announced all those times when you were like, I'm not running, that's not biasing my posts, be honest.
I did not make the decision to run until about 3.5-4 weeks ago. I was really kind of ambivalent about it. Well, ambivalent is the wrong word. I was in a position where there were a lot of people. I mean, even if I bitch at you guys, there's no question that you guys have a good team that is, you know, working well together. I just kind of disagree, you know, what in the ways you're applying that work. So it was kind of, I was in a position where if I was going to run, I wanted to run knowing that I could make a contribution to the team. And I wasn't convinced, I definitely wasn't convinced last year that I could do it. And I am 100% happy and satisfied with the decision I made regarding CSM7. It was the right decision at that time. I still think it's the right decision, and presented with that same set of conditions, I would have made that exact same decision again. My reasons for running this year, I laid them out in the blog post that I wrote. I think I can clearly make more of a contribution this coming year than I would have been able to make the past year, and I'm not going to be in a position where I'm competing votes-wise with a lot of guys whose contributions I think were, positive.
Fair enough. All right, so let's do some closing thoughts on the minutes. And we'll say anything CSM7 related to the past couple months, since the minutes shed a lot of light on what was going on. Mina, we'll give you a couple minutes, then we'll give Rippard a couple minutes, and then we'll close it up.
Well, I think it shows a lot of promise. I mean, it's abundantly clear by now that I love the direction CCP is going in, and if they can continue on that direction, do multiple Apocrypha type expansions in a row, it's going to be good, and I hope that they can involve the players and involve the CSM in that. And that's all I really have to say.
Rippard?
I think the minutes are great. I think the one place where CSM7 has been an unqualified success is you've published two sets of minutes this year that have both been fantastic pieces of work. I think you guys should be very proud of that. As for CSM7, as far as I'm concerned, your term began about 8 days ago. I mean, that was, you know, when CCP clearly said, okay, we've kind of been screwing up and screwing around for the last 9 months. Let's sit down and actually get serious about what we want to do and actually involve the player representatives in that. So, you know, I hope you guys aren't burned out quite yet, because I think you guys have a very busy 3 months and 5 days ahead of you here, and I think you guys could still make a huge contribution in that time, and I look forward to seeing it and hearing about it.
Seconded.
Alrighty. Rippard, you want to have 60 seconds to shoot a turtle?
No, I think I've done far more shooting than Turtle has, and I think that's eminently proven.
Well, you, sir, can tuck away those 56 seconds for the next time you're around.
Fair enough.
I will say, though, we got your campaign off to a great start, didn't we?
With what, the Declarations 40?
Yeah, just a flurry of publicity.
Well, I don't know. It, you know, all publicity is good publicity, even if I'm, you know, sitting here getting beaten down for 2 hours.
Excuse me, I think our CSM7 not chairman is proof that not all publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point.
I think 2 hours is a little bit of an over-exaggeration.
Well, that's true, that was Declarations, what, 20, 29, 25? What was the one I was on before, Alec?
30 something, I thought. Alright, guess, well, that's it. Thank you for tuning in, Declarations of War. Head up our website, declarationsofwar.com. Check out the show poll. Leave a comment on the blog, on the podcast release, all that sort of stuff. And if you want to join NAR, NAR Academy, go to www.narmercs.com. Check out our forums. And while you're on the Declarations of War site, feel free to leave a donation and subscribe. This is very much a listener-supported podcast, and we love branching out our community. We love being supported by the community. Take it easy, guys. Fly safe.
Don't fly safe. Flying safe is boring.
Confirm.
Regret.